Welcome to Climate Levers. This is the podcast that shares stories about the people who fight climate change by protecting and regenerating Earth's natural systems. Today, we properly introduce someone who is exploring innovative ways to do two key things for future generations of humans. The first is to reduce the effects of climate change, and the second is to repair the environmental damage humans have caused. Those two things are closely interrelated. If we fix the damage we've done to nature, we take a giant step toward reducing climate change. Meet Eduardo Esparza. He's a serial entrepreneur in his late 40s. Two kids, a U.S. citizen who was born in Mexico, still spends a few weeks a year there with his extended family. Eduardo is exploring ways to face the risks of global collapse head-on and to do something he believes can reduce those risks. He spent more than a year doing extensive research on possible solutions. Then, he and a team he works with chose hope, action, and community over the more fear-based responses many of us might consider. You'll learn about the urgent work Eduardo and others are doing despite their belief that we're all doing too little, too late. 2 years ago, Eduardo ran a successful marketing consulting company that worked with software companies. He was living in Beirut, Lebanon, where he remotely ran his company with about 25 employees and contractors. The company served about a dozen clients in multiple countries, mostly in the software business. But for more than a decade before that, Eduardo had been deeply concerned about the changing climate, and he wanted to do something about it, but he didn't know what to do. Last year, he came to a decision and shut down his marketing consulting firm. He now leads efforts to finance initiatives that he believes can help save humanity from what he sees as the real possibility of extinction. Eduardo, like some scientists, believes a global collapse has already begun, and it may have devastating consequences within the next few decades. Even so, Eduardo hasn't lost hope. Instead, he's in the early stages of financing efforts to regenerate land that human activity has destroyed or depleted. This and a few following episodes of Climate Levers will show you how Eduardo redirected his life and found the support of other like-minded people. To me, Eduardo's path and those of our other guests are examples of the kinds of well-informed commitments it's within your power and mind to make in our own lives. Eduardo's modest about what he's doing. He doesn't think he has accomplished enough to talk about it yet.
I just feel really like I'm in a good path to making a difference. I can feel it. I feel all the energy, all the stars aligning, everything. I mean, something is happening every day. I'll tell you the stories about yesterday. It will be incredible. But what I'm saying is that I don't think there's enough progress yet to tell the story, you know? To me, success, the flagship will be like, hey, here's the first regenerative community developed with a community of at least 300 people thriving in this new way of life. And it's regenerative, it helps the planet, it's prosperous for everybody, human and non-human beings. And I feel that when we have planted the flag and say, here's the first one, all right, now we have something to go and replicate, and but we have pieces of it, because I mean, we're talking to the team, people who have done parts of it, but I feel the integration of all these things together into a single community and say, hey, this is the future, this is an alternative way of living. I feel that we're not there yet, and so like, how attractive can be my story yet? I mean, it's a story in the making, certainly, I was telling you, but I don't know. What's your take on this?
I think your story in the making is fascinating. And I think it's fascinating because a lot of people are in your situation. A lot of the people that you want to be communicating with are in your situation. They have a feeling that they need to do something. They're on a path. They're not sure that the path is going to be successful. But they've chosen a path that seems like it fits for them. Their combination of skills, their combination of interests, their social environment, their connections, and so on. And nobody knows if any of this is really ultimately going to work out. And my feeling is that if you wait until you have a success to report, two things are going to happen. One is it may be too late to tell your story at all. And it may be that people you could have influenced to either do something similar to what you're doing or to help support you in what you're trying to do will have missed the opportunity because you want to wait and sort of like pop this surprise on them about, look at all these marvelous things that Eduardo did. I think what's likely to happen is that the people who you want to attract to your cause are going to see Eduardo for who he is. They're going to understand the doubts, the hesitations, the good things that you're experiencing and so on. They're going to want to get behind that because telling your story as a work in progress rather than as a fait accompli builds credibility. It builds trust. It builds a desire, an emotional commitment to help you out. And I think that's the value of telling your story now, even though it's an unfinished story. In recent years, Eduardo became deeply concerned about what he sees as a coming collapse of Earth's natural systems. He bases his concerns on something called planetary boundaries. Planetary boundaries are a concept introduced in 2009 by a group of scientists who published in Nature magazine. Boundaries are based on the idea that Earth has finite natural resources, and it can't regenerate all of them. The boundaries include climate change, extinctions and loss of biodiversity, deforestation and soil degradation, water pollution and fertilizer use, ocean acidification, depletion of ozone in the stratosphere, and the use of global fresh water. The consequences of exceeding even one natural boundary are likely to affect all the other boundaries. To avoid environmental disasters, it should be the goal of human societies to live within all 9 boundaries. A recent report from September 2023 indicates that human activity has now caused Earth to exceed 6 of its 9 natural boundaries.
We have better measurement systems today than ever in history. We have better evidence of the degradation of ice sheets in the North Pole and South Poles. We have better measurement of the health of the Amazon forest and the boreal forests than ever before. Now, we see clear trends. The entire future of civilization is at stake. We have crossed 6 out of the 9. This is not public knowledge. This is not something that this is like, hey, yeah, every day in the news. No, it's simply not awareness about this. In the last conference in Davos, there was a scientist that presented the imminency of the Atlantic meridional overturning circulation collapse.
By Davos, Eduardo's referring to the annual meeting of the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland. The meeting brings together leaders from government, business, and civil society to discuss and address the most pressing global issues. Delegates attend by invitation only. They include leading economists, politicians, scientists, business leaders, and media from around the world. In 2022, presenters at Davos talked about the potential collapse of the Atlantic Meridional Overturning Circulation, or AMOC. This is important because the AMOC circulates water within the Atlantic Ocean in a way that brings warm water north and cold water south. A collapse of the AMOC would likely disrupt hospitable climate in both the northern and southern hemispheres. That could be disastrous for food production, among other things.
This was presented in Davos as a fact, not a possibility. It's coming. It's coming our way. This is one of the about 9 tipping points also. This is one of the many tipping points, all right, that when one is crossed, it will cause and have ripple effects on others. You know, if the Atlantic Meridional Overturning Circulation collapses, it collapses the rainfall in the rainforest. If that collapses, it collapses the rainforest in the entire continent, which further increases the probability of the boreal forest collapsing. And without that respiration, likely, and as the temperature continues to increase, so CO2, the ability of the ice sheets in the north and the south to continue to be frozen, that's our... lower and lower. I mean, we're looking at the prospects already, seeing evidence of longer summers and shorter winters. it's already predicted that in a few years we'll have, I mean, it's not out of the question that in a few years we'll have an ice-free summer in the North Pole. This is crazy. I mean, the North Pole acts as a mirror. And the sun comes in, the white color of the snow is reflecting. It's acting as a mirror, reflecting its radiation into this light and radiation and heat out into space. When this disappears, this becomes an absorber. And what I mean by tipping points is like it will increase the rate at which the planet heats, you know, tipping other things around. When rainfall stops, you know what happens, you know, agricultural ability. Some agricultural places still depend on rainfall. So we're talking about a massive disruption of agricultural lands. I mean, we already saw the evidence of that in the sub-Saharan monsoon disruption back in the 80s and 90s. Remember all that starvation in Africa? And we saw commercials on the TV to say, hey, you know, there are people having hunger in Africa. Let's help them. There was all these whole organizations fighting hunger. Well, the root cause of that was that in the 40s, a lot of factories in Europe were putting some substances into the atmosphere, which ended up reflecting light and disrupting the monsoon, which disrupted the agricultural land over there, causing a lot of starvation. So it's not like climate change is not something that will happen. It already started happening 100 years ago. And more, I mean, it must have been changing the natural environment for a while. It's just that we're achieving an exponential point and we're not pretty good at understanding exponential curves. No, we're facing something that we have never seen before.
How soon does Eduardo think a collapse could happen?
That's a tough question to answer, but I mean, citing some sources, looking at, I mean, I've read anything from 20 years to 100 years, and then, although there's several definitions of what collapse means. Collapse in its ultimate consequences is a complete devastation and extinction. But collapse also for other people means, okay, it's just a massive disruption in supply chain. Caused the 70% of the crops in Europe to collapse. And now imagine that instead of a virus, there is a massive disruption of rainfall and supply chains in a more permanent manner. You know, well, it's not a supply chain to reestablish anymore. It's just permanently disrupted. What does that do? So time frames vary.
Eduardo's not alone in thinking a global collapse is likely and already underway. What factors are causing the problems Eduardo is concerned about? Well, industrial agriculture is among the biggest causes of environmental degradation because it destroys the natural environment. Industrial agriculture uses highly industrial processes to produce a relatively small number of cash crops. It typically relies on hybrid seed varieties, massive amounts of fertilizers and pesticides made from petrochemicals, lots of irrigation, and equipment that consumes a lot of fossil fuels and releases carbon into the atmosphere. Climate change is a result, not a root cause, of our degradation of the environment. Even if we cut carbon emissions and eliminate the excess carbon that's accumulated in the atmosphere for the past 200 years, we may stop further climate change, but we still have all the problems resulting from our harm to nature. But if we also focus on fixing natural systems, those systems can help remove carbon from the atmosphere and restore a hospitable environment. What solutions does Eduardo see for the massive problems we face? The one he's working toward has four key elements. First, focus on regenerating Earth, not just reducing carbon emissions. Second, replace industrial agriculture with regenerative farming on a global scale. Third, enable farmers to adopt materials and processes that are efficient, productive, and environmentally sustainable within their bioregions. And fourth, develop regenerative communities within each bioregion. Such communities serve local or regional needs. They become less dependent on fragile, complex global and national supply chains. Now, there's a lot to understand here. Let's start with bioregions. That's a term you'll be hearing a lot here at Climate Levers. Bioregions are geographic areas that contain a combination of similar natural and cultural features. A single bioregion includes common characteristics such as soil, climate, watersheds, and native plants and animals. The boundaries of bioregions are defined by natural features rather than by political lines. So a bioregion may include multiple nations, inhabitants, watersheds, and ecosystems within its boundaries. Bioregions are the biggest areas where people can maintain a connection to other people based on their shared place and their experiences. One example of a bioregion is the Cascadia bioregion, which includes the entire watershed of the Columbia River and the Cascade Range, stretching from Northern California into Canada. Another example is the Great Lakes in the central United States, and a third is Arcadia in the northeastern part of the United States and southeastern Canada. Now that we've covered bioregions, we're left with four more key terms to cover. What do we mean by earth regeneration, and what does it have to do with bioregions? Well, earth regeneration is a process of restoring and revitalizing the health and productivity of the systems that support life on Earth. It includes the restoration of ecosystems such as forests, wetlands, grasslands, and it also includes the restoration of soil health and water quality. From there, we go to regenerative agriculture. Regenerative agriculture is an approach to farming that regenerates natural systems rather than depleting them. It's a key component of earth regeneration. Well, how do all these regenerative processes get organized? Regeneration occurs through social systems that we call regenerative communities. These communities are groups of people who pursue regenerative principles and activities within their bioregion. A regenerative community is typically the size of a smallish rural town. Regenerative communities are more likely to be rural rather than urban or suburban. They're self-supporting and financially and materially relatively independent of cities or remote government agencies. For example, regenerative communities provide most of their own food, and they don't feel economically driven to ship the excess food they produce to faraway markets. I spoke with Eduardo about his goals of building regenerative communities and processes as he sat in the apartment of a friend who lives in Manhattan in New York City. Eduardo compares the difference between the urban life that surrounds him when he's in New York and the kind of regenerative community that he and others are trying to build for the future. Waving toward the area around him in Manhattan, he says,
"I see everybody's in their own box. I don't know how many people are building in Manhattan, probably a couple million, right? But everybody's in the same situation. Everybody's living alone. How can we have millions of people alone? It just doesn't make any sense." And so the social coherence, the storytelling, the rituals that reminds us who we are and the sharing, it's all just not there.
In contrast, regenerative communities can provide much of what's missing in city life, including deep relationships with community and the planet.
I mean, that is the core of the problem of climate change, I think. It's relationship. There's a sense of relationship between humans beyond transaction and the sense of relationship between humans and non-human beings beyond exploitation and beyond use. And when we've developed that relationship, the power of that linkage and that relationship changes the whole dynamic. It changes the economy, it changes the prosperity, it changes the sense of well-being. And I think we're head-on aiming to tackle the biggest systemic risk that is posed to humanity through very, very basic principles of basically elevating consciousness and living in a different state of sharing and caring and creating the environment for it, because architecture has a big deal. I mean, it is a big deal. But true regeneration is complete. It's social, it's natural environment, it's prosperity, it's health, it's economic. And so the full package of regeneration, once people get it and say, "Oh, okay, so that's really what you mean." Yes, that's what I mean. It's way beyond sustainability. And it's very appealing because I feel that in everybody's life, everybody's feeling that something's missing, but very few can really articulate what is it that is actually missing. And actually articulating what a regenerative community is, it's very appealing. It's like utopia. It's like, oh my God, I would love to live there in a place where there's social coherence and cohesion and you're accepted just by virtue of being there. You don't have to fight for acceptance. You don't have to fight for survival because there's abundance of healthy food, et cetera, et cetera. And that doesn't mean that we have to go back to live in a cage or live like we used to live 10,000 years ago. We're not talking about that. We're talking about operating and living under different principles. And it's very appealing, and so people are loving it.
In the next few episodes of Climate Levers, we'll talk about ways to build and manage regenerative communities. Up next, you'll meet Alex Corin, who's working to create structures and systems that will enable regenerative communities to manage themselves. We'll ask Alex what regenerative communities are likely to look and feel like, and how they may operate from day to day. Then in future episodes, we'll follow Eduardo Esparza to an exclusive conference for high net worth impact investors in the Hamptons near New York City. We'll also join Eduardo on a trip to Baja California and to the Rocky Mountains with indigenous elders from the Kogi tribe in Colombia. And we'll hear about Eduardo's remarkable visit to witness environmental devastation from the shores of the Salton Sea in Southern California. Don't worry, we'll also return to some of the big topics we've opened here. We'll talk about the differences between industrial agriculture and regenerative farming, and we'll explore how each of the potential solutions might work in practice. Please join us for this interesting and consequential adventure.